Hello, my name is Gavin Martin. I'm currently a senior in the College of Arts and Sciences at Cornell University. For my final project for Black Women in Political Leadership, I decided to research and interview Arkansas State Senator Stephanie Flowers. Senator Flowers' passionate testimony went viral last year, refusing to stand down or be silenced when discussing a proposed Stand Your Ground bill. In addition to her passionate testimony, Senator Flowers has worked to ensure parental involvement plans are more user-friendly, protected the interest of veterans when a financial institution is their guardian, and has helped make sure that Capitol grounds honor Gold Star families. Here's my interview with Senator Flowers.
Could you tell me what your childhood was like? Did you have siblings, and how did your upbringing and childhood affect the way that you lead in your leadership style?
Well, I have had 8 siblings.
Oh, wow.
7th of 9.
Oh, wow. And how did you see this? Did your upbringing affect the way that you show leadership and your leadership styles today?
Yeah, I would think so. I think so.
Mm.
My father was a lawyer. Father was engaged in civil rights.
And did your father inspire you to also take action for civil rights?
I don't know if I was inspired to, but certainly became familiar with issues.
Mm-hmm.
And
And then how did you get your start in politics, and how did you get to where you are now?
Well, I never really planned to be in politics. Thought I'd just be a lawyer. I ran for judge, actually, in 1994, for juvenile court judge here. And I ran as an independent before it was a nonpartisan race. I lost to the Democratic incumbent.
Mm.
So as an independent, I got about a third of the votes. I thought that was...
Wow.
But then in 2004, I decided to run for state representative because I had a 12-year-old son, and the issue of the day was education and schools, consolidation, and the office holder at that time in my district, the state representative, was termed out. It was an open seat. And I was concerned with my son's school and a facility. The health was
of course
not up to par, and didn't think that he was being challenged very much. They were talking about consolidating schools, and I was just listening to that debate as it happened and 2003 and 2004, and I didn't understand where the current legislature at that time was going. Some of that stuff they were proposing was, I didn't understand it at all. Didn't understand why. So, went around and inventory, hired an out-of-state firm to take inventory of facilities and stuff like that. All of that was based on a case that was filed. Actually, in the district that I serve now, challenging equal education opportunity for minority students.
Mm.
Lakeview case. And that's what prompted solid that wasn't from here, that was gonna run, and I thought I could better serve.
So, who would you consider to be your role models and mentors in life? And how do you see the, people supporting you through your legislation or personally, differing maybe between your male and your female colleagues?
Oh, I always liked Senator Robert Jordan and Bush Shirley Chisholm.
She's my role model, too.
Yeah. And I think a lot of my emotion and style pretty comes from watching my father. Hmm. He exhibited a lot of emotion, more so at home than I saw. But I did go to some speaking engagements with him. I was a little kid.
So currently you are one of three black women in the Arkansas State Senate. Do you find it difficult to work with your peers on policy when coming from a different background? And where do you find your most support when crafting policy or working on initiatives?
Yeah, it's very difficult. Couple of sessions kind of was drawn from filing deals. It's so frustrating sometimes. But, you know, I'm looking back over my time in the legislature. I think I've proposed and gotten some pretty good deals passed that became law. A lot of it came from observations that I had made in my private law practice, representing people that are minorities or just low income. And so dealing with issues like that, one of the first things I filed and that passed was a bill to address disabled veterans that were under guardianships of by banks, at least their state, and found in the course of my law practice that there was this one World War II veteran, a black man that had come out disabled, and for decades his money was handled by a bank that the Veterans Administration had chosen, and this one bank bought him a house and mortgaged it through their bank.
Oh my gosh.
And so they were getting interest, and it was a balloon note that was increased every 2 years or so. And it was a purchase price that he could have paid for out of the funds that were on deposit. So, and they weren't reporting it to the court in the annual accountings. So, I proposed a bill that would disallow any bank as a guardian of a veteran's estate from mortgaging financing through their bank. And then there were other things. Finally got a bill bill passed to deal with the maintenance of school facilities, and as a result, the system called School Dude was set up so that administrators, teachers can input in the computer a request for repairs or maintenance, and supposed to make it easier for the maintenance crew to repair the issue. Mm-hmm. And it also sets up a schedule for the maintenance to check off when they change filters and for the heating and air conditioning system and other things that should be done on a routine basis. Because at my son's school, they weren't changing the air filter, so the air quality was real bad. The carbon dioxide levels were real high, which caused students to do poorly on tests. Mm-hmm. And also it contributed to health issues. My son was coming home with headaches because they had mildew and mold all throughout the school when the air filters weren't changed. And there was a lot of issues with the ice machine backing up to the sewer, all kinds of stuff. So that was done. And then another thing that I'm proud of is to reduce the penalty for failure to appear on a minor traffic violation, because if a fine wasn't paid or they didn't appear on the speeding ticket or whatever the traffic citation was for, mm-hmm. it was an unclassified offense or no more than the lowest misdemeanor. But when they got the failure to appear, it became a Class A misdemeanor, which generally the person who's picked up in traffic or whatever and they're found to have not paid the ticket and failed to appear, and a failure to appear was issued, they go to jail and then they'd end up just paying the fine, but they'd have that Class A misdemeanor on their record. And that prohibited them from getting certain jobs or keeping certain jobs, like being a barber or being a security guard. Some minimum wage jobs they lost because of it. So that penalty for that failure to appear for that traffic offense was reduced so that it's not a Class A misdemeanor anymore and it doesn't go into the Criminal Information Center for employers to see and then proceed to them or whatever, or not give them a job in the first place. And there's other things that I passed, and I tried to pass some other things dealing with school discipline and sending public school students to juvenile court for things that, you know, you just wouldn't normally. I never would have thought of sending a kid to juvenile court for disorderly conduct or just something that wasn't that serious. But they get in the system and then they have to have a probation officer and conditions of to be complied with and court fees and court fines. And a lot of times I found that those children had disability issues that were recognizable under the Individuals with Disability Education Act, and they weren't being proceeded with through the processes set up by that Individual with Disability Education Act. It's IDEA. So, a lot of times those kids should have been evaluated to see if they had a disability. Some had not.
Mm-hmm.
They did have a disability. And then some that had a disability, they were sent to juvenile court without due process rights accorded by that IDEA. So, anyway, I didn't get any of that passed, and I think that was around 2015 or so, and that just really discouraged me.
Mm-hmm.
No end. Some of my Democratic colleagues were on that committee, and they did not support my bills, and that just really, that disturbed me.
Well, I guess this is also a good transition into my last question, being that in March of this last year, you had a very passionate testimony in response to your peers' views on gun control and open carry. And this took to social media and news stations around the country. How has this changed your place in the Arkansas Senate and state legislature? And how has it changed your life? And has it made it easier to get legislation through the legislature? And has it changed your perception towards policy? So I guess, what have the effects of this been here?
We're not in session now.
Mm-hmm.
We got out in April, I think.
Mm.
And not long after that video or that committee meeting. And, so, like I said, I ran a couple of bills this last time. And, I was successful, I think, with one. One dealt with a court in my district. They were trying to phase it out and put it in another district. So we stopped that by delay. And, so it wasn't passed, and how has this affected me? It's affected me deeply, I would say.
Mm.
I got a lot of response from all over the country and outside the country in the form of telephone calls to this number that you dial. This is my office number. And, so a lot of people were touched, it appears, by my argument that I made that day.
Mm.
And it was interesting to see the emails, to get the emails, to get the cards, and to get these messages. And a lot of people were thankful. And it was a lot of, I was struck mostly, I guess, by the young black men that called and left messages and wanted to thank me for speaking up for them. And so, I got to understand just how deep it touched people and how many people are affected by gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear people leaving messages and obviously in tears and so sad, and how many family members and friends they had lost, and a lot of them would say they wish they had a representative like me. And but that was it was really something. And mothers saying, that's what they wanted to say, and they were
glad that somebody said what they were feeling. And it wasn't just black, it was white, black and brown, and it was just really interesting to see how many people were touched by that. And they would say it wasn't just black males, it was white males and older people and younger people and mothers, fathers, grandparents, brothers and sisters. There's a lot. There's a lot. And people still write and call, and because it seems like people are still, just for the first time, watching it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've noticed after some incident, some shooting has happened since March, and it seems like people watch that for the first time. That's what they say. And they, you know, tell me how they felt and they watched it, and they watched it so many times that it's a sentiment that they share. So, been interesting. I just lost my nephew. He was 43. He was killed on November 9th last month. He was shot 7 times. And
my condolences. I'm so sorry.
Was burned beyond recognition in his truck. So, I'm sort of sad, because I don't understand all this. I don't understand these guns. I don't understand where these guns are coming from. I don't understand why it's so difficult to have some common sense gun laws. I mean,
I
had people that would write me, young white boys would call and say that they agreed everybody didn't need a gun. They'd tell me how they almost shot their best friend or something, not knowing how to really handle a gun. And there's just a lot of different stories that people would relate about their experience with guns and violence, and and people still call and they want to just talk to me, and they want to ask me for ideas about how to address a certain issue they're dealing with. You know, I don't answer this phone a whole lot. My office, I've kind of been down because my law office was structurally damaged in 2018. It shared a common wall with a building owned by this guy that the city ordered to tear down, and his contractors just totally wrecked my office, so I had to move everything out. So I'm not practicing law anymore. I got all my stuff in 5 units of storage, and so that kind of, at least it gave me a little bit more time to focus on some of that legislation that was being presented in the Senate this past session. But I kind of, I'm just kind of, you hear so much stuff on the news, you have so many things going on, just like my little nephew, my young nephew was killed. It's just a bad kind of time, It's really sad. I don't understand it. I don't understand why the Senate doesn't pass universal background check. I don't understand why these people are so gung-ho, you know? Just kind of crazy.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Real crazy.
Well, Senator Flowers, thank you so much for your time today. And I'm my condolences for the loss of your family.
Yeah, well, I hope this is enough for you to get a decent grade.
Oh, yeah, it is. And also, I just want to let you know how much you've inspired me.
Concluding this interview, I realized that Senator Flowers and me had a lot in common, including our role models Barbara Jordan and Shirley Chisholm. Additionally, from Senator Flowers, I learned that the path to political success does not always look one way. I am so thankful to have been able to do this project and to work with her. She's such an amazing political figure who is changing our political landscape today.